Go ahead and go to John chapter 8. We're starting a new series. We'll probably go 4 or 5 weeks on this one. Life and liberty. I think it's really important to address this in our culture right now and where we've been at. And of course, the church's job in part is to conform the culture to Christ. And so with that, we need to understand what the biblical narrative says when it comes to life and liberty. What does that actually mean? Because a lot of people are talking these days about life and what that might look like, and that there's life maybe for some and there's not life for others. And what life might look like is promoting one group's interest above and against someone else's interest. And maybe it means that we'd have to define what life is in terms of babies that are being aborted in our country at the millions. What does that look like? And what does that have to do with liberty, as it turns out? What does liberty really mean? When we think of liberty, I think it evokes some sense of going back to our founding fathers and what it is that they did to separate themselves from a tyrant king, from a tyrant country. What did that look like? What would it take to go to a place to have true liberty? What is it that we would define as liberty? And I think in the United States, the Western view of liberty is one where we have life. We have the liberty to make decisions. We have the freedom to be autonomous in making those decisions as individuals. And therefore, we are free as a people, free from slavery, free from tyranny, free from sin. That's what our forefathers absolutely believed. And in fact, I'm going to talk about it in a minute, but did you know that part of their founding process as they were leaving and separating from those in the British Isles, the idea that liberty from tyranny coincided with righteousness. Have you ever thought about that? That having liberty in one's life, being free, is righteous. We haven't thought about it in that realm very much. That it's righteous morally to be free. It's righteous that God created us with unalienable rights. Our forefathers knew that. They knew that it was righteous that man be free, that man is free. And it was unrighteous of those, particularly in our country several hundred years ago, to enslave others. Now, that was a part of a process that had been going on for thousands of years. And let us not forget, it was Western white Europeans that ended slavery in the United States. It was Western white Europeans that ended slavery in the United States. Check your history. I'm going to say it a third time. It was Western whites. European males specifically that ended slavery in the world for the first time in history. Let's make no mistake. But our forefathers, those that founded the United States, knew that liberty was righteous because it came from God. Why? Well, in part because of the narrative in John chapter 8. So let's have a look. In 8:32, Jesus said, "I tell you the truth, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." Jesus declares that truth and freedom are found in him. Consider the greater context of the world. Consider the greater context, flying at 70,000 feet. What was the greater context? Forget about, for a minute, our interactions with other people. Forget about fellowship with one another, where freedom should be expressed in truth, of course, right? Think about the greater context, that it is righteous that we live as Jesus taught us to live. And so true freedom and true truth are found in the gospel. So what Jesus is suggesting to us is that when we are enslaved by sin as a result of the fall, Genesis chapter 3, that is true bondage, which has nothing to do with physical prisons and stones and chains and locks. The metaphor applies. When we're enslaved by sin, we're in bondage to it, just like we are in a physical prison, except this is in a spiritual sense. And Jesus goes on to tell them about this. So in verse 31, Jesus said to the people who believed in him, "You are truly my disciples if you remain faithful to my teachings, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." So what's the condition? What's the conditional phrase in the statement? If you, he says, "You are truly my disciples if," the condition, "if you remain faithful to my teachings." So our forefathers, in part, founded in part a country and a system on the teaching that Jesus Christ was the true giver of freedom. That's why they framed in our Constitution that we have certain unalienable rights that are from God. They got it right out of here, probably John chapter 8. I hadn't looked at the Federalist Papers. I intended to get time to do that, to see if they made reference to that, because they often did. And I would love to have seen whether or not they did that. But I didn't. Maybe I'll try to get to it this week. It'd be very curious if they had mentioned John chapter 8. But they didn't want a theocracy. Make no mistake, they didn't want a theocracy. Individuals are still accountable to be responsible. We are individually accountable to be responsible, to be righteous, to do the right thing. We're individually accountable to do the right thing. That's what they based our entire country on, the premise that men would act, and women and boys and girls would act correctly, that we would act correctly. They founded, the entire country was founded on that principle. And today, we find a whole lot of people that aren't acting correctly. They're not acting correctly toward their brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, cousins, uncles, and so on. They're not acting correctly. They're not acting righteously. In fact, they're acting quite selfishly at the detriment of our country. So how do we define freedom and liberty? Well, that's easy. Jesus did it for us. Does money equal freedom? Is freedom about politics, religion, our own desires? Today's culture doesn't want boundaries. They want no boundaries. All bets are off. Anybody can do whatever they want. Is that what true freedom is? We could go to Galatians chapter 5 and address this some more, but we're not going to get there yet. So what is this freedom that we're talking about here? Religion played a major role in the American Revolution by offering a moral sanction for the opposition of the British, an assurance to the average American that revolution was justified in the sight of God. It became a righteous revolution. And in that time, the ministers were the ones that did the work of the social radicalists. Ministers taught that this was a righteous cause, and it absolutely was, because of John chapter 8, the form of tyranny. If you want to be free, you have to go and get it. You have to ask God to help you. And what do we know that it says at the end of the Declaration of Independence? It says there that we are aspiring to and trusting God in his divine providence. We give our lives, futures, fortunes, asking God in his providence to help us. I summarized it by paraphrasing, but that's essentially what it says. They're relying on God in providence. That word was used in those days, and that meant God's intervention. When they said providence, it meant God's intervention. So them men prayed, those 55 founding fathers and their families, and many others, I'm sure, they were praying that God would intervene. And he did, because the Spanish came, many Native American Indians and the fur trade came, the Canadians came, or people that were in Canada, they weren't Canadians then, they were French Canadians, as I'm sure you've got your education from Jacques Le Christian. He knows about the fur trade, but it was folks from there, and France, many stepped up to help us. There's no doubt about it. And we gained our independence because God helped us. But our framers, our forefathers knew that it was righteousness. You had to act righteously. And by the way, for other history buffs, our forefathers were already talking about the idea of slavery in the 1770s. So enough of this nonsense about the evils of America. It may have been the evils of certain Americans at the time, certainly, but our founding fathers looked to stop slavery from the beginning. If you don't know that, you need to read your history. Otherwise, you're ignorant, you don't know what you're talking about, and you're informing others falsely. Our forefathers had already talked about ending slavery at the beginning of the founding of our country. Just go back and look at the Federalist Papers. So in 831, Jesus said to the people who believed in him, "You are truly my disciples if you remain faithful to my teachings." So what does that mean? It really means that Jesus was saying, "You are my disciple if you do what I do." That's really all he said. "You are truly my disciples if you remain faithful to my teachings. And you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." And the answer in 33, "But we're descendants of Abraham," they said. "We have never been slaves to anyone. What do you mean you will be set free?" And in 14, Jesus replied, "I tell you the truth. Everyone who sins is a slave of sin." Now we know what he's talking about. Cleared it up right there. So any discussion with regards to freedom has to begin with the individual being responsible to act rightly. You see, it goes right back to the idea of the spirituality, the moral compulsion of people created as moral beings, the proclivity to enslave others. That's human nature. So Jesus addressed it here. "I tell you the truth, everyone who sins is a slave of sin. A slave is not a permanent member of the family, but a son is part of a family of the family forever. So if the Son sets you free, you are truly free." We just sang that this morning. Right out of John 8. "Yes, I realize that you're descendants of Abraham, and yet some of you are trying to kill me because there's no room in your hearts for my message. I'm telling you what I saw when I was with my father, but you are following the advice of your father." And obviously he's implying the devil. "Our father is Abraham," they declared. "No," Jesus replied, "for if you were really the children of Abraham, you would follow his example. Instead, you are trying to kill me because I told you the truth, which I heard from God. Abraham never did such a thing. No, you are imitating your real father." And then he goes on. They replied, "We aren't illegitimate children. God himself is our one true father." Jesus told them, "If God were your father, you would love me because I have come to you from God. I am not here on my own, but he sent me. Why can't you understand what I'm saying? It's because you can't even hear me. For you are children of your father, the devil, and do what you do, and you do the evil thing, and you love to do evil things that he does. He was a murderer from the beginning. He has always hated the truth because there's no truth in him. When he lies, it is consistent with his character, for he is a liar and the father of lies. So when I tell the truth, you just naturally don't believe me. Which of you can truthfully accuse me of sin? And since I'm telling you the truth, why don't you believe me? Anyone who belongs to God listens gladly to the words of God, but you don't listen because you don't belong to God." Millions and millions of people in this country fall into that category. Unfortunately, their father is the devil. And they won't accept the things of God because God's spirit is not in them. That's what the Bible says, that those things are understood spiritually. They're only discerned and understood spiritually. So you have to be a spiritual being to truly understand what it means to be free. And when the scripture speaks to your heart, and the reason you can understand it is because you're spiritual and that you are children of the Father. You could walk into a room blindfolded and know if God was in the corner if he started speaking. You could know. You would know God. You would know his character. The minute he started speaking, you would know if it was him or the devil or not. You would know him automatically because it's spiritual. You would be able to discern if that was the devil or not. But there are a lot of people who are dullards. They're dull to spiritual things. Their mind is not set on the things of God, and they reject the things of God because they're following their father, the devil, as what Jesus truly said here. And so the Greek word for truth is aletheia, and it means what is true. Now, this is really important. Don't miss this. I don't put in the Greek text all the time, right, because I don't want to pretend that I'm some fancy something whatever, right? But I put it here because it matters in the text. What is true in any matter under consideration? So what does that mean? It means that the truth applies no matter the context. There are certain principles that we follow regardless of what others' opinions are. For instance, the Ten Commandments. Are there any negotiations with thou shalt not murder? Is there a negotiation? Well, that's your version of the truth, Pastor. Murder doesn't apply to babies when they're aborted because it's not a baby, it's a fetus. You see what the devil has done? Let's change the name of a human being to a fetus and then make it okay to murder a fetus. That's what they did. I was online once here in the last few months, and it was talking about Second Amendment and some other things regarding what was happening in our country before the election. And the subject in the blog got into abortions. And I just can't remain silent. Usually I look at them and I think sometimes, you know, idiot, moron, you know, knucklehead. And then I just, after I get through that emotional, you know, breakdown and temper tantrum, then I get to the reality of what it is and I go, well, how can I really be angry with them? Their father is the devil, right? So anyway, a doctor was on there, well, supposedly, and piped in a long response. You know, I got the notification set, so when someone responds to something that I post, I can see what it is. So she responded, this doctor responded, and said, this age-old argument is over. It's not a baby, it's a fetus. That's exactly what she said. And I thought, oh my gosh, this unbiblical, unbelievable, heathen response is how callous, how cruel, and how vicious toward another life you could be to dehumanize something like a baby. And so I responded back and I said, you know, changing the name doesn't make it any less a baby. How many times in history have we changed the name of things to make them mean something else so that we can justify our utter failure and sinfulness and wickedness? And that's what's happened here. It is so bad that in our country these days, you can go to prison for 10 years and get fined $25,000 for shooting an eagle. But it's perfectly legal to abort a baby. What has happened to us? Everybody has their version of truth, and it must be tested and measured against the scripture. So this Greek word is the truth. I am the way, the truth. Is the truth no matter the context. There are certain there's no negotiation, right? And Jesus proved that he said who he was because of the resurrection. That was the proof in the pudding. That was the end of it. That shut all discussions off. After the resurrection, that's over. That discussion is ended. And when Jesus says here in 14, which we tend to forget because the resurrection came much later, in John chapter 21 and so on, by that point, everyone forgets about this, that Jesus is the way, the truth, and life. When Jesus says that he is the truth in John 14, he's saying that the reality of knowing the real God only comes through him. And that's what 14:6 says. That the only reality, the reality that matters in regarding the truth, is that it comes through him. He is the way, the truth, and the life. Meaning, let's break that down just briefly because we don't have a lot of time. The way. What do you mean when he says the way? The way that he lived. The way that he taught us, the way that he showed us. The Christian way, Christ follower, disciple. That's what the way is. The way to truth is through Christ. True freedom comes by knowing him and living as he lived. That's what Jesus was saying. And that brings life. The way that Jesus is to truth, this is righteous. It's right to do what I'm doing. And it will bring you life. I am life to you if you will do that. And Jesus reiterates this. Well, he didn't reiterate it. He said this first, and then in John 14, he said in 6 what he said. But he said it here, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. What's the truth? That Jesus is the way, that he is the truth, meaning what I'm saying is true and righteous, and that brings life. Does that make sense? That's what he's getting at here. So if you want to know what it means, you know, I hear young people say, I'm done with that Christian business. I want to live. It's going to end in destruction. How many of you know a person that refuses to accept God in their life? And it's nothing but destruction. One bad decision after the other. Every turn is a turn in the wrong direction. You've seen it happen before your very eyes. Or eventually it catches up. It catches up. Because you reap what you sow, the law of the harvest. That's why I have a real strong principle. You know how you stop gossip? You know how you stop gossip? Law of the harvest. Yeah, you know, it's easy to say, well, just don't talk, right? Right? But there's even something that's even more important. Well, no more important, equally important, as the best basis for a first step. If we're gonna act righteously, right, then we wanna act righteously, we wanna act right. And so the way that we stop gossip is that we apply the law, the principle, the law of the harvest. Not only you reap what you sow, but that's only the first part. We've heard about that 1,000 times. I think the most important part is the second part, and that is the way that you measure to others will be measured to you. That's a warning. But it's also a blessing. If you heap love and joy and righteousness on others, God says that that's going to come right back on you. And others will speak. If you speak highly of others, if you speak generously of others, if you treat others with fairness and respect, and you love them, they're going to follow on the same way. Because that's the law of the harvest. This is not karma. It's the law of the harvest. It's not karma. It's the law of the harvest. The Bible calls it the law of the harvest. You reap what you sow. The way you measure others will be measured to you. So you stop gossip. Do you want someone talking behind your back about you like that? You want someone else to be thinking of poorly of you and you're not, and you know, think of your motives in a bad way, think you're motivated wrongly, start judging your intentions? Is that what you really want, someone to treat you like that? No. So don't treat them like that. Assume the best. I had a young boy came to me and says, I don't agree with what happened. They're taking advantage of him, and I'm going to go straighten him out. I'm like, that's your perception of truth. Maybe that person made a decision, and they don't want that decision interfered with. And you going and intervening is just like gossip. Is you're basing all your beliefs and all your views on things that you really don't know that are in the heart of another person. Right? We can only measure one another by what? Love. That's the only really righteous way to measure one another. Truly. As love is expressed in our lives. As we express love. That's the true measure. Truly, anything else is our perception, right? We have perceptions about how people live, but we don't know that that's true or not. What is true? What is true, what we know for sure, is that I need to love my neighbor as myself. We know that's true. And we know it's true that we should think highly of one another, to honor one another, and believe that each other are making the right decisions. That we don't distrust each other's motives and reasons, because we're all individually accountable to be and act rightly. Well, we know in this human, so Vince, you're being pretty naive and pretty Pollyann. No, I'm not. It places a lot of trust in God ultimately, doesn't it? Yeah. It places a lot of trust ultimately in God. And we firmly hold to the belief that each individual is responsible and accountable to do right. And that's how that fleshes out. And if that does not happen, then we apply Galatians chapter 6, where it says if we see a brother, sister, child, grand stumble or trip, that we are supposed to what? Gently, lovingly restore. Not straight them out, put them in the field for 6 months, make sure that they understand that they've sinned, and make them bow on their hands and knees in repentance. Is that what it says? Sign a document? No, that's not what it says. It says gently restore. Nothing else. Why? Because God's going to do the straightening out in the heart. God's going to fix that mess in there in his way, in his time. As we live with one another, what do? We restore, reconcile, as soon as possible. As soon as possible. So the truth thus learned would liberate them, the people, as Jesus is talking about here, including the people that were following, scribes, Pharisees, and the disciples. It would set them free from legalism and superstition. That's the truth of the gospel. But set them free, though, from the bondage of sin, specifically, right? So he says, 8:34, I tell you the truth, everyone who sins is a slave of sin. The truth and freedom that Jesus speaks of isn't about people being true to themselves and then having some ambiguous feeling of personal freedom. That's not what it means. And that's what we see in our culture today. Everyone has this ambiguous idea about what it means to be free. Like I told you about the young person that says, I don't want to undo that Christianity. I want to live. You know what that means. You know exactly what that means. And it usually ends in death, not life. So truth is the reality of Jesus and what he has done. Freedom is found solely in Jesus. And that's the context of freedom. Freedom, why? Because the context Jesus is talking about is the greater context. The greatest context of our humanity. We're not talking about individual acts per se. We're talking about freedom from sin. Bondage, being slaves to ourselves. Being bound in chains by our own desires, by our own selfishness, by our own wrong motivations, by our need for power and our greed and our selfishness and all those things that we would see in Galatians 5, the acts of the flesh, right? We'll get to that next time. The acts of the flesh. The deeds of the flesh are evident, including debauchery and sexual sins and all the rest. And so sin and person that's bound is bound by those fleshly desires, those desires that Paul describes there in Galatians 5, you want to read later on, that we're slaves to ourselves, if you will, bounded by our own evil desires. And Jesus said, I came to set you free from that. Because if we're freed from that, then we're freed with the chains broken to love one another in the same way. That's why he said it would set you free. Because in love there is no judgment. In love there is no haste in that sense. In love there is no dealing with people's motivations wrongly and assuming the worst. That's what Jesus was saying. And so what we have left is that we're forced philosophically to believe that somebody's acting rightly. What would it be like if you lived your life like that, gang? I'm asking. What would it be like if you believed that every person's motivation, I'm talking about family of God, that they were motivated rightly? Every decision they made was righteous. What if you just assume that? Would it change the way you live? If you just assume that everyone is being righteous and doing it the right way for the right reasons, that places a lot of trust in God, doesn't it? Yeah, if something was to prove out that that didn't happen, we'd be super disappointed, wouldn't we? But is that God's fault? No. Because if we automatically assume that people are acting rightly, then that means that we're forced. We're forced philosophically, theologically. We're forced to do what? To love them. We must love them. Everyone. We're compelled. It's why you don't second guess. You don't think, because you're just your own perception. You don't really know. Right? So that's what the freedom Jesus is talking about. He's saying that when you have the freedom to believe that others are motivated correctly, that they're doing righteous things, that they're doing things for righteousness' sake, when we trust God that that's what's happening, it sets you free. It sets you free. So the truth Jesus is describing is to abide in him. The way I described this earlier, the gospel, living in light of the gospel, doing things God's way is what sets us free. Talk about the way. Of course, I read this, no one can come to the Father except through me. So Jesus is the way to God, obviously. We don't need to belabor the point. I almost said, do you have any questions? You can tell I've been briefing people all week. Worship team, would you come?